It's intermission, and we welcome as our guest, Maestro Louis Scaglione. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Kevin. Pleasure to be here.
We heard violinist Michael Ludwig.
Yes. So, well, you know, Michael and I have been collaborating for the better part now of 24 or 5 years. Well, it's a little longer now, 25 years. He is just a phenomenal musician, and certainly many in our listening audience knows Michael Ludwig and knows of his artistry and his talents. He periodically and typically for some larger festival concerts or anniversary benchmarks, I invite Michael back to collaborate. So we've done many, I think we've done 9 concerti together. And Tchaikovsky is, of course, all of our favorites, I think, especially amongst our listening audience. In fact, I heard it not too long ago on the radio that you played it. But it's a piece that Michael really plays beautifully well, as we heard. And the relationship that I have with Michael as a dear, dear friend of mine is really quite special, especially when we get into the orchestra context. I'm on the podium and he is next to the podium, and there is just a communication that works between us because we've collaborated for so many years and have done quite a few different, very different pieces, you know, from Tchaikovsky to Goldmark, Beethoven, Vinyavsky. We've done Barber. So we've done a lot of unique pieces and wonderful pieces for violin soloist and orchestra. But it's the connection that we have and the communication that just really comes naturally. As a conductor, if you can really get in tune, as it were, no pun intended, but in tune with your soloist, then the communication that you deliver to the orchestra becomes very natural. It really helps to bring both soloist and orchestra together. And there are just things that he does, the way Michael breathes, that I've come to learn how he breathes, how he phrases, what I need to look for in the score as it applies to the soloist in order to communicate what I need to communicate to the orchestra to keep everything together. And we're always dealing with, you know, we're still dealing with high school students by far, some college students. So they're teenagers. We have to remember that their level of experience playing concerti is not that profound or in depth. So when they have a soloist like Michael, and last week we talked about Deborah Lou Harder and just what it means to bring a soloist of this caliber to the orchestra to participate in a musical event, it really raises the level of the entire performance of the entire orchestra. These are musicians of first-rate caliber, and they just bring so much to the rehearsal process, and it's the rehearsal process that I really find interesting in the interaction. Some soloists come in, and they say very little, but they let their music speak for them. And so in that rehearsal process, it's interesting for me to watch the dynamics and the level of attention that the students, especially at the first rehearsal, if I bring a Michael Ludwig in, I bring in a Deborah Lou Harder, I bring in a David Kim, or any one of the wonderful soloists we've had, the attention of the orchestra immediately focuses on the soloist. And you can see that, actually, and hear that happen. It's that whole unspoken communication. I think we talked a little bit about this last week. That is so critical and important, that human interaction, because it's the nonverbal that really can have a profound level of communication amongst people than even what is spoken. So it just lifts their performance to greater heights and levels. That's really why I, as much as I enjoy working with my colleagues, I really do this for the students to really help them achieve a greater level for themselves, which is what's inspired by bringing a soloist of this caliber into the room and working with them. And we usually only have 2, maybe 3 rehearsals with the soloist at 1-hour increments, because that's the time we have allotted or the time that they have to give, because they're all busy people. So we put this together in a very short order of time, in less than 3 hours, if you want to tally it all up. And I rehearse the orchestra separately, you know, to get the parts learned, because they have to really have mastery of their parts before we bring the soloist in. But that's how it works. And it's always astounding to me how the orchestra rises to the occasion, but that has a lot to do with what the soloist brings to the table.
I'll bet you miss that now, because you can't have soloists
virtually. I miss it a lot. I miss it a lot. And this season, even if we do get back together, we were supposed to have a soloist this year, 2 soloists this year, in fact. And, you know, I had to postpone that But next year is my 25th anniversary of completing that with the orchestra. So I think I'm going to bring back some of my very special friends, and we're going to have a concerto soloist on each of our programs next year if we do three of them, which I'm sure we will get back to.
You could do the triple concerto of Beethoven.
We could.
Let me ask you then about the plans for reopening. We were discussing before the actual interview.
Right.
About steps you're taking to make that happen.
We have been working on this project since July. As I mentioned before, in August I made the decision that there was really no possibility of opening up on time, so that we committed to but I needed to give some level of security to our students in a plan. So I instructed all of our staff to say, okay, we're going to do 14-week virtual session beginning at the beginning of the year when we typically do and go till the holidays. And then hopefully reassemble in January. Well, I'm still on that track. And what we have done is we've created this master policy and protocol plan. So it's a document. It's about 12 or 14 pages long at this point. We keep adding to it and keep refining it. So we have this document. We have identified all the PPE stuff we need. So there are companies now that are making special bags and covers for woodwind and brass instruments, and they're making special masks for woodwind and brass instruments because that's the big tricky wicket. With strings and with percussion and harp and piano, you put masks on everybody, make sure everyone keeps their hands washed and, you know, nobody touches one another. You're good to go in many respects. And you have enough ventilation, so we had to look at the ventilation of our rooms. Fortunately, at St. Patrick's Hall, we have very high ceilings, 15-foot ceilings in the main hall, and it's very airy and good ventilation. We have lots of rooms to spread out in at St. Patrick's Hall. We have three floors, so, you know, we have several staircases, so you have to have plan out which staircase do you go up and which one do you come down on. You know, do we have check-in table, and everybody's got to fill out a questionnaire before they come in. You know, the typical questionnaire that I'm sure many of us have had to fill out, you know, over the last few months, to saying you haven't been exposed to COVID-19, you haven't been visited any place that has exposure, we know the drill. And then, you know, have to set up a temperature-taking station, so we have to invest in that. We have to have all of the sanitation gel, hand sanitizer, so we had to buy those stations. And I mentioned about the PPE for the instruments themselves, bags and covers for instruments, masks that are specially designed so that the musician could put the mouthpiece through the mask. Oh. They're still having the mask on without cutting a hole in one. You know,
right.
It's designed, you know, get a stitch so it doesn't come apart. So we have those considerations. And then we also have to be mindful of our students who and families who are not comfortable coming in at this time. So we did a survey. The survey broke down in general terms. 40% of our respondents, we had 90% response on our survey. So that was excellent. And I thank all of my students and families for doing that. But 40% said they would come back tomorrow. And then 40% said, we'll come back, but pending on what your policies and protocols are. And so that left 20% that said, we're not comfortable until there's a vaccine or until next year, and that's fine. So for those students, we can't reassemble everybody in the rehearsal hall and leave everybody else out, right? So we have to invest in the additional infrastructure. You know, we had to run lines because our main office is on the third floor of the building, and it's an old 19th century school building. You know, at St. Patrick's Hall at 20th and Locust. And we had to run cable and lines from where the ports are, where Comcast comes in, that we have for Wi-Fi and Internet. So the deal is to set up a microphone, a very good microphone, which we had to invest in, and a video camera or a webcam, and plug that into the system so that those people who want to stay at home, students who want to stay at home, they can at least log in and observe the class, play along. As long as they're on mute, they can play along with rehearsal so that at least they have the experience. Or those who have returned, but let's say they get sick or they have a cold or flu, because we don't want anybody coming around if you got a sniffle, stay at home. But they can at least log in to the rehearsal that I'm doing and still get that learning. Not the same as being there, but they won't lose as much by being absent. So we had to build all this stuff out because we don't have any of this stuff. So we did. So we put this whole infrastructure into place, and suffice to say, we will be able to get back to school, as it were, back to the rehearsal room. We're going to be able to do it safely, securely, with all the guidelines in place. We have a phenomenal team of actual physicians on our board. So they have been my medicine cabinet, as I call them, and they have advised us since July. We were meeting at one point every week to try to figure all this stuff out. It's been a lot. Our great friends at Settlement Music School have shared a lot because they're also in the same boat as we are, and they're bringing people back. They've already started that process in bringing chamber music back and bringing certain teachers back for private lessons, you know. And then we have to invest in the shields, the divide, the plexiglass shields. That was our biggest expense, really, was buying those plexiglass shields and getting everything in place. You know, that's what we're planning to do anyway.
How does that affect the sound, though? Obviously, you don't know yet, but...
Shields are used, sound barrier shields are used, and sometimes if you go to the Philadelphia Orchestra, for example, you'll see sound barrier shields, especially with the row that sits in front of the percussion, because the percussion usually is at the back row
right.
of the orchestra, and then the next tier down in Verizon Hall, on the risers, you'll have brass, and then in front of the brass are the woodwinds. So usually the woodwinds will have these plexiglass kind of shields around. They're more designed to kind of come around the head area. But what we're talking about is kind of full, you know, 5 foot high, 60 inch high panels that are trifold. So you fold them out so they encase the front and the sides of the chair where the musician sits in this box, and you kind of put them all along the way. That's a level of protection. We're trying to just keep everything boxed in and keep. Well, we have air purifiers in the room, so we have to keep the room circulating, the air circulating, and then cleaning and disinfecting in between rehearsals. So all of that has to play. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. My plan is to reconvene in January, because we do have concerts scheduled for March, beginning in March. Bravo Brass, I think, is first out the gate mid-March, and then the Field of Youth Orchestra in Verizon Hall is at the end of March. And then the rest of our groups come in May for their concerts. So at this juncture, I'm planning a staggered return. And then we also have to everything is changing almost on a daily basis at this juncture and week by week. And, you know, if we have a vaccine that, you know, is more widely distributed around the first of the year or within the first quarter of the first of the year, all the better, and that'll give people a level of security as well and get back. But it's vitally important, and I cannot stress this enough, of how vitally important it is to get children back into the classroom. So we're doing everything we possibly can, and I think we're going to be very successful at it. I have a phenomenal board of trustees. I have a phenomenal staff. I have phenomenal colleagues as our directors and our coaches and our teaching artists and our masterclass faculty. So everybody is putting forward 100% of effort, and I couldn't be more pleased and proud of their collective efforts. As I always say, the conductor is only as good as his orchestra, and for me, my orchestra is my board, it's a collection of my board, my staff, my community partners like WRTI. You know, all of this, we're all in this boat together, and we all have to work together in order to get to a brighter future. That brighter future is around the corner. I'm assured of that. I feel confident in that. And with great partnerships like WRTI, we continue making the music happen. We continue bringing music to those who want it, who need it, and who rejoice in it and are lifted up by it and bring great joy to our community when our community has been plagued with a lot of unrest and sorrow. So anything our listening audience can do to support wonderful institutions within the community, especially in like WRTI. If you're not a member of WRTI, please become a member. And I'm going to make that pitch for us, even though we're not in a radio drive at this point. But I'm going to make that very strong recommendation. And I cannot say enough about this radio station and what it means to our community and what it has meant during this very difficult time. Music is a source of rejoicing. It is a way to lift the human spirit, and is really meant to bring about communal joy. And so I thank you, Kevin, and all of your colleagues here at WRTI for what you do in support of our community and certainly in support of the PYO Music Institute. And we're very pleased and honored to be part of the WRTI family.
Since this is the final broadcast of this series, I wish you the wonderful luck of having a live performance the next time we meet in the spring.
Yes, we will. And thank you, Kevin. Again, thank you to WRTI for all of its support. And to our listening audience, we wish you a very happy and healthy holiday season, which is just right around the corner. And then we will look forward to a more prosperous new year. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Maestro Scaglione.